Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from Business Radio X studio in downtown Tempe, where we help build businesses and connect with the right people. I'm your host, Karen Nowicki, and I'm very excited to have two gentlemen in the studio today, representing a couple different organizations, Max Gonzalez, Executive Vice President of Strategy and Relationship Management with Chicano Por La Causa. Welcome, Max.
Thank you.
Ah, absolutely. And Randall Bro, Founder and President at Ascend Consulting.
That's me.
Yes, it is indeed. Well, I am very much looking forward to our conversation today. And we'll start off with Randall, Ascend Consulting. Now, before you start telling us what Ascend is, you and I connected, I think, via LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that there was this whole industry around helping business owners with their exit plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Figuring out where they're going to go. That's right.
Yeah. Duh. Yeah. I mean, it seems to be a no-brainer. I've shared with you that my husband is a fairly new business owner in Chandler. I've been in consulting for years, but never really thought about what is it going to look like at the end of our careers, at the end of it. So help us understand Ascend Consulting and why there's such a need for what you do.
Well, I think a lot of people who own businesses get started much the same way you describe. The focus is on getting started and getting something to work. And once it's working, that's it. It's working. And they just kind of keep chugging forward without really stopping to think, okay, where's this going to go? Now that we have something that's successful, stable, where are we going with this? How can this serve us? What do we want out of this? A lot of people just never really stop to think about that. And so they end up just sort of chuggling along and without a real clear plan.
And do some of them then end up liquidating or?
Well, most of them do.
The majority.
Yeah, like 80%. It's like not even close. Yeah. And we say liquidate, a lot of people don't really appreciate what that means. If you sold your house by liquidating it, you would tear it down and sell the lumber, right? So when you liquidate a business, that's what you do. You tear it down and you sell off the pieces and the parts. So you get very little value on the dollar, you know, the value of that business as a going enterprise. And like I said, well over 80% of small businesses in this country end up ultimately in liquidation.
That's a staggering amount of people.
It really is.
Especially if, at least for us, part of the reason why we've gone into business for ourselves is because we've wanted to have a legacy, not only be our own business owners and be able to manage our income more than if we worked for maybe a corporation, but we also want to leave something for our kids. And you're saying that 80% of business owners may hope for that, but don't have a plan or a strategy for that.
Right. Well, if you're going to leave it to your kids, your chances are better, maybe 70%.
But if they're prepared to do something with it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So how do you come in, Randall? What does Ascend Consulting do?
Well, that's what we focus on doing. We focus on helping people understand where they're going, where they want to go, and how their business can service them, can help them achieve their goals. When you're talking about small businesses, and this is what makes it so complicated, okay? When you look at a public company, there's no transition. The CEO retires, they have a new CEO, things keep marching on, nothing stops. But with a small business, that's different. When the owner wants to retire, that's a major transition that needs to be managed. And so, and the other thing that makes it really complicated is that separating out the business issues from a small business, from everything else, the personal financial issues, estate planning, family therapy, there are a lot of pieces and parts that need to be kind of brought together to make an exit plan work. And because it's complicated, well, it's not really complicated, it just has a lot of moving parts that need to be coordinated. And because of that, they typically don't happen by accident. And it's very difficult to kind of strap it all together at the last minute and make it work. And so that's why most businesses liquidate. They don't end up where they ought to be because the lack of planning, a lack of preparation.
Probably not unsimilar to a real estate purchase where the emotions are high for whatever reason, either excited or maybe having to downsize, whatever the issue is. And if a homeowner, either the buying or the selling end, is not familiar with how that the transaction works, the legalities, all the moving parts, the lender, the title company, the what do you call it when they check the house? All that, somebody's got to be able to help them navigate through it comfortably.
And business owners, they want to be the real estate agent, they want to be the broker, they want to be the builder.
Without the knowledge, though.
Without the knowledge, yeah. Without even really stopping to even research what all the pieces and parts are. A lot of them are just trying to wing it. And I think that's probably part of the reason why it goes down the way it does, is that, you know, these business owners are successful people. And they're successful for a reason. In large part, they're successful because of the way they approach things. You know, people describe it as the entrepreneurial way or entrepreneurship. And essentially what that means is we're going to try something. And if that something doesn't work, we're going to try something else. We're going to keep everything simple. And we're just not going to give up until this works. And that's what got them to where they are. But that doesn't work with exit planning. Because if you try something, you're done. You don't get to try something else. You get one shot. We all exit once. And if you screw it up the first time, you probably won't get another shot to do it. And it's not simple. It will never become simple. It will stay complex. So you just need to chew on it, you know, one piece of the elephant at a time and march your way through. And a lot of times you don't control, you know, you don't control any of this. You don't control the timing of your own exit. Over half of business owners, you know, their exits happen to them. For whatever reason, you know, they find they have to exit. So they don't control the timing of it. And that lack of control, the need for planning, getting it right the first time, these are the secrets to success for exit planning. And that's not the way that they've approached their lives. It's not what's made them successful. So this is a departure for them.
With the percentage so big with people who are liquidating or not ending their business the way they would want to, would you say, is there another figure that, like, beyond liquidation, what's the next most popular way of leaving a business? Popular.
Right. Well, if you really make it simple, there are only three options.
Okay.
Right. You can sell your business, you can give your business away, or you can pause. You know, that you could refinance and wait until later, which is kind of like the pause strategy. Okay. But ultimately, you end up in one of the first two. You're either going to give your business away or you're going to sell it. And so a lot of people don't think that, well, I'm going to give my business away typically to my children or a child. So I don't need to worry about selling it. You know, I'm just going to pass it on. A few things wrong with that. A lot of people say that, you know, I have kids. First of all, 70% of transitions to next generation do not go. They fail. And so most of those, again, end up in liquidation, right?
Right.
So it's not like transitioning to a family member is easy either. It's not. And most of the time it doesn't work, again, unless you plan for it. If you plan to sell your business, you make it worth something, right? If you can sell it, it's worth something. So the first thing you need to do is make your business worth something. And if you say, oh, I'm just going to give it to my kid, here you go, honey. Let me give you something that's worthless and you can give up your career and devote your life to it.
Right.
If you can't sell it, it doesn't have any value. And children generally don't like to be given things that have no value. So positioning the business for selling it is very similar to positioning it to give it to your child, because the business needs to be worth something, worth giving up a career for. It needs to be transferable. You know, so if you are the owner and you run everything and nobody knows what you do, all the customers know you, they buy because they know you, none of that's transferable. And your kid's going to have just as much trouble as a third-party buyer. So the process of transitioning to a next generation is actually, it's very similar. It's almost the exact same process.
And yet we would not think to treat it that way.
No.
Yeah.
And you need to be open to the possibility that it's not going to work, you know, and you're going to end up having to sell it anyway. That's not your plan, but life happens. And you don't want your default to be liquidation. You want your default to be a third-party sale.
And how early should a business owner be thinking about that exit strategy? I mean, is it too early right when we open our business and we're a year in?
Well, ideally, the new generation of business people, they have their exit plan in place when they write their business plan. Like from the moment of inception, they've already thought through their exit plan. That's a big extreme for the baby boomers in the room.
Yeah.
If your business is ready to go, it's going to take 6 months minimum just to sell it. You know, the six to nine months just to sell a business that's ready to go. If you're looking for, like, we just need to sell it, we need to sell it quick, maybe 6 months of prep. But if you want to get a good price for your business, if you want your business to really be worth something, you need to be willing to invest like 3 years. You know, some businesses 5 years. It depends on how high you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people, they'll get into the process and they'll decide, you know what? The business is worth enough now. We can pull the plug now and we'll be fine. And they do. So it's not always about maximizing the value of the business. It's about making the business serve what they want, you know, their particular goals. But yeah, I would say once you get past the startup phase, you feel that your business is past its startup phase and we really have something, you should be thinking about where you're going to be going with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay, we're marching down the field. You need to know what's an end zone, what's a field goal. You need to know, how do we score here? So you need to be thinking about that really once you get past the startup phase. But the shortest answer is, if you think there's any chance at all that either you will want to or you will have to exit your business in the next 5 years, then you need to jump in and start.
Well,
start,
right. Think with
action.
The end in mind, right?
It's a wise.
Exactly. I'm also thinking of that's a Stephen Covey, obviously, one of his 7 habits. But I'm thinking of another book that I read years ago, and I can't remember why I was turned on to it. But Michael Gerber's E-Myth.
Yeah, E-Myth Revisited is the one.
He talked about this idea of McDonaldizing your business, preparing your business in such a manner that there are systems and there are structure so that if you had to step away, somebody else could step in and run it effectively. And it just smooth, and always looking at it from that perspective. And this is not unsimilar.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
because whether I'm passing it on to my family or I'm going to sell it, it needs to be, first of all, it needs to have the value and the value determined.
Yes.
But it also has to be structured and organized and systemized in such a way that it's as smooth as it can be.
And a lot of times when you do that, you unlock the growth of the business. A lot of small businesses top out because it's so dependent on the owner and the owner has only so much bandwidth.
Right.
So by making the business more systematized and organized and coordinated and all of that sort of documented so everybody kind of knows how it's done, then suddenly it frees the owner from working in the business as a worker and allows the owner to work on the business as an owner.
Mm-hmm.
And that generally will open the business up to more opportunities and more growth. So even long before you're ready to exit, going through that process allows you to grow your business a lot more than it will if you just keep it in startup mode.
Yeah. And obviously, it makes sense.
Yeah.
So with your consulting practice, what is it like for you to work with business owners and family-run businesses? I mean, what are some of the things that you do and what's the great joy in it for you?
Well, I grew up in a family business, so this is kind of home to me. I started my consulting. I spent most of my career consulting. I started my consulting career working with family businesses. And 9/11 and 2008 kind of changed that for me. A lot of small businesses weren't hiring consultants anymore. So my practice sort of migrated over to more Fortune 500 companies. And now our children empty nested us and we're chasing them west. My wife and I have created a new life for ourselves in a new state. And I've opened a new practice and getting back to my roots. So this is kind of like coming home for me again. And I really enjoy working with family-owned businesses. You see the impact of the work that you do, the value you create. And there's actually this thing called appreciation, which is really nice to get from clients. So you don't often get that in Fortune 500 corporate America.
I would imagine they're grateful when you can help point them in the direction of a successful closure for their chapter with their business.
Yes.
They've got to be grateful.
Yes. One of the greatest team building activities you can ever do is to be successful together. And when you allow or help families be successful together in business, it's a wonderful thing. It certainly creates business value, but it also creates family value too. And that's a wonderful thing.
You are in Prescott.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what's a great client for you, like a great referral for you? Is it as easy as saying just a small family-owned business?
I try to help businesses that are small because most businesses are really small. And I'm putting together some resources for very small businesses. But the fact of the matter is, if you're a very small business, you're going to have to do a lot of this on your own. It's going to be a do-it-yourself sort of thing just because, it's just the expense associated with professional help is not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to put together some guidance there for do-it-yourselfers. But most of the work I do is consulting. And so for me, businesses that are at least a couple million in revenue is probably where they'll start being interested in getting a consultant. Yeah, if you have a professional services firm with very high margins, you know, basically no cost of goods sold, that number can come down considerably.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of on the low side, it's kind of hard to define. Usually by the time a company is doing like $50 million in revenue, they have advisors on staff to do stuff.
Part of what they're doing.
Yeah. The big thing is you have a small business owner who's essentially a baby boomer. You know, we're starting to wrap our minds around the fact that we are mortal and we will exit whether we want to or not at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of business baby boomers, by the way, own like 2/3 of the small businesses in this country. So 2/3 of the small businesses in this country will go through some sort of transition in the next 10, 20 years, which is a staggering number and of itself. So if you're a business owner kind of up there a little bit, you know, 60s, late 60s, certainly early 70s, and you really haven't started doing some sort of plan for your transition, probably running out of steam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting tired of working and, you know, it's not what it used to be sort of thing. It's time to start thinking about passing that baton, whether it's to a younger generation or a third party buyer. It's time to start thinking about that.
Yeah. So important. What are to take us back to valuation?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the steps that a small business owner can take to improve their valuation?
Just make themselves worth more.
That's right? Pretty simple. Yeah.
No. Trying to understand the question.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the answer too.
Yeah. Well, it's transferability is important. Reliability is important. Trying to create a business that has sustainable revenue and profits. If you've got regular profits and revenue, that's better than spiking one year and falling through the cellar the next. You know, businesses, people who are looked to buy businesses, they want to buy something that's solid. They want to buy something where you can hand the keys over to them and they can drive it.
Mm-hmm.
So transferability is important. And having the systems, as we talked about, in place is important. Because if you want to buy something, chances are you're going to want to grow it. You know, you're going to be selling to somebody who's probably younger than you are with a lot of vinegar. And so they're going to want to grow it. They're going to want to make their mark. So having a business that's systematized and able to grow is important. So
perfect. How can our listeners find Ascend Consulting and get in touch with you if they have some questions?
Well, it's not hard. It's ascendconsulting.com.
Okay.
The hardest thing about Ascend Consulting is the word ascend. It's the opposite of descend, right? Ascend.
Like right. That's what we want them to do, to continue to ascend.
So it continues to ascend. I thought it was an easy word, but it turns out it's not. So anyway, Ascend Consulting. .com is the website. I've got a couple of free resources for you there. There's a desirability index to see if your business would likely sell at a premium or sell at a discount or be able to be sold at all. It takes about 2 minutes to fill out. And I have a free webinar that goes into all of this in greater detail. the elements of value and what businesses can do to improve their value. And if you attend the webinar, as a matter of fact, there's tied to it is a free valuation. So you can find out what your business is worth.
It's now a great place to start without a heavy commitment.
Yes.
To really say, I need help beyond that,
yes,
but at least to figure out where we're at.
Yeah, it just kind of brings all the pieces and parts together. I keep talking about pieces and parts. It is. It's pieces and parts, and it kind of brings it all together one place for you. So it's a great place to start.
Great. Well, I'm excited to learn and take the same information home to Mike. And with both of us being fairly new business owners, it's definitely something we need to be thinking about right now.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
In our mind and our hearts, we have an idea of how we want that to look at the end of end of time, our time.
Yeah.
And I would hate for that to be accelerated for some reason, and want to make sure that we have a plan where we do have the value and the opportunity to sell our book of business. So it's been a pleasure to hear more about your company and Ascend Consulting. One more time for our listeners, the website again?
AscendConsulting.com.
Perfect. And we'll have it on our website with the replay as well. Okay. Randall, are you okay to stay with us a little bit longer while we turn our attention and talk to Max?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, hello. You're still with us. I can't help but think after having read your bio, you know, I'm sure a lot of the things that we talked about, even that your organization's a nonprofit. It's a 501c3.
Correct.
Yeah. But you are the master of systemizing and planning and organization. So I would imagine some of the things that Randall shared feels familiar.
Very familiar. And the talk about identifying a sustainable revenue stream, I mean, clearly that's key, particularly in the nonprofit sector. And you talked about even an exit strategy. Now, for us, it's not necessarily an exit strategy for the entire organizations because we're so diverse. Our portfolio is incredibly diverse, but it is about a particular business line that we maybe have just launched, just started. And as Randall pointed out, when we write our business plan for that new business line, we also have an exit strategy. So we know if this thing fails, we want to fail fast,
right,
and we want to get out.
Hmm. So tell us about your organization. Let's start from the beginning. I just was looking for maybe a smooth transition because I kept thinking of you several times while Randall was talking, because I know that's your wheelhouse. That's where you play. Your zone of genius is the very things we've been talking about.
Genius, that's a pretty big word.
I don't know. I've known you for a few years. I think you might fit in that category.
The organization's actually quite interesting. We're going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary next year, actually in 2 years. So it's been around for quite some time. It was formally incorporated in 1969, but Chicanos por la Causa was actually a movement that began mid-60s, about 67, and it began born out of the Civil Rights era. And in that case, in the city of Phoenix, a group of college students really got together, started organizing. And the reason they got together and started organizing is because of some injustices they felt that were going on in the Phoenix Union High School District. So they organized a walkout. What happened, what was going on, is they felt a lot of the Latino youth at that time were not being steered toward higher education. They were being steered more toward the vocational issue, even despite them being high academic performers. So they said, well, no, this is not what we want. We want our counselors at the area to be guiding our kids to some opportunity to again some higher learning. So they began to protest. They didn't feel like they were being listened to. So they began organized walkouts. And if you know how the school system is funded, you know on the 100th day of the school year, that's what, right? 100th day is big. So they began these walkouts, and you know, they took the kids out for a day and that didn't get attention. They took the kids out for a week and that didn't get a whole lot of attention either. So they planned a month, and guess where that month fell? It fell around that 100th day.
And now they're ready to listen.
And they were successful. And from that, the organization decided, you know what, we need to formally incorporate. So they incorporated. I will tell you that the people that founded Chicanos por la Causa back in 69 did not envision what this organization would become. It has evolved into something much, much more than even just an advocacy group, which is what it was, a grassroots advocacy group. We now are in three different states. We're fully statewide in Arizona. We have about 850 employees in the three states.
Wow.
So we are, again, fully statewide in Arizona. We are also in Nevada and New Mexico. Our annual revenues last year were about $60 million. We anticipate closing this past fiscal year at $80 million, and next year we're projecting about $100 million. So we're very much in a growth cycle. We have four impact areas. We have services in education, real estate operations, which really about affordable housing, health and human services. And then our last one is economic development. So we have in that area things that do small business lending, technical assistance, et cetera. So we're a very diverse group.
And the growth, how many years since 69? Is that what you said?
Yeah, we were formally incorporated in 1969.
And how did you land with the organization? Because you're an ASU grad.
Yeah. So what happened is I was working at a corporation here, long time, great corporation. They took care of me. It was a great place to work. And I wanted to get involved in the community, right? So I became a board member for Chicanos Public Houses. So I was a board member for 5 years. While I was a board member at the time, the chief operating officer started talking to me about, hey, you know, what are your thoughts about coming over and actually becoming a staff member? I really hadn't considered it. I was actually doing quite well where I was, and I turned him down. And as the conversation continued, and as I really started to look at the opportunity and look at where I thought CPLC is going, I took it. I jumped on it. So that was, 11, 12 years ago?
Wow.
And it was the best move I could have made.
Community, using everything that you took from corporate and obviously making a huge impact. How many years ago? 11 years ago?
Yeah, almost 12 now, yeah.
And prior to that, was it outside of Arizona, or did you have a hand at helping with that growth outside of the state walls?
So we were not outside of Arizona when we started, when I started. So I had a role, a small role at that time. But yeah, I was a part of the whole growth when we first moved into New Mexico first. And so we moved in there. And then when we moved into Las Vegas and Nevada, which actually we're experiencing faster growth right now than in New Mexico. Hmm. It was quite exciting, but we have bigger goals than that. We are looking for all the states that are contiguous to Arizona. So California, Utah, Colorado, but we're also looking at Texas. We just feel that there's a natural tie-in for opportunities.
Absolutely.
To go into Texas. So we want to be a Southwest regional nonprofit.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm blown away with the growth. And Randall, you said the fastest way to team build is to see success. Clearly, you guys have experienced that over the years.
Well, our business model is what makes CPLC unique. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, but we really do take an entrepreneurial mindset to our nonprofit. So when you look at our executive team, we have eight of us, and of those eight, six of us have MBAs. Right. And I say that because that's the kind of mentality and the thought process you need to run an organization, I think, with the sophistication of CPLC and,
yep,
and with their business goals. At the end of the day, 501c3 is just a tax status.
It better be a business.
We still got to pay for, yep, the light bill. We still got to pay, you know, meet payroll every other week, just like every other business does.
Yep. And impact the community in a positive way. Therefore, there has to be money flowing in and out of,
absolutely,
an organization like that.
There's no mission without revenue.
Right. I worked for a school district in the East Valley for years, and I had the pleasure of being an assistant principal and later on at the district office. And I remember sitting down with the superintendency several times, and this has been, I don't know, 20 years ago, but it's when charter schools and private schools were starting to pull students out of, yeah, these otherwise neighborhood schools. And I remember the superintendent looking at me and saying, why is this happening? I said, you're not competing. You're not thinking about this from a business perspective. We've got to be a couple of steps ahead of your customers. And by the way, your parents are your customers, right? So whether it's a nonprofit or a government organization, I think where some of our nonprofits or even school districts fall short is when they don't come at it from that strategic planning perspective and really look at growth and manage those different areas. So tell us, what part of the Hispanic community, or how does this work with relationship? Is there membership? Are there opportunities? I mean, you mentioned housing. Tell me a little bit more about how, if I'm a member of the Hispanic community, how am I benefiting?
Well, it's broader than the Hispanic community and the Latino community. I mean, we started, right, because of what I explained earlier. But as our services grew, really, we serve anybody
okay,
who walks through our doors. In fact, nearly 40% of our clients are non-Latino. It doesn't matter. If you are in need of our services, our door is open to you, regardless of your race, ethnicity, et cetera.
Fantastic. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a misconception of the organization. We always have to educate people on that. We're no different than JFCS, which is Jewish Family.
Okay.
children something. You know, they're just like us.
Inclusive.
Their services are they're open to everybody. National Urban League, etc. They're open to anybody who walks through their door.
Good. Just the origin or the beginning, you know, was really to help people within that ethnic background.
Right.
And yeah.
Well, we still hold true to the mission, and at the end of the day, we still make sure that our services are located in areas that are high Latino population. We make sure that our services are provided with cultural and linguistic competencies. So all that is still who we are and still defines us.
But we're
us.
Not turning anybody away.
None, nobody.
Yeah, fantastic. Tell us about the future direction.
Yeah, CPLC, as I already talked about, our growth objectives are very aggressive. We have a CEO that is incredibly dynamic and has quite a vision. His name is David Adam, and he sits on a number of national things. And David has set some goals for us to really become that regional nonprofit. But in addition to that, that model I talked about or hinted a bit earlier is really what makes CPLC unique, and which is really the secret sauce that has made us successful for 50 years. And that is we have a portfolio of some for-profit entities. The for-profit entities that we have, now their profits spin off into the nonprofit. So we are the shareholder, right? So we don't have the dividend comes directly to CPLC. And just so everyone is clear, while the for-profit still has to compete with all the for-profit, they pay all the for-profit taxes, et cetera. We're talking about the dividend at the end that comes into the nonprofit. That helps us with our sustainability. If you know what the nonprofit environment is like, funding is a bit volatile at times. It changes with government priorities. It changes with corporate priorities. So it's not just an even flow. It's like this. So how do you make that even flow of revenue? How do you make it more predictable? One, you diversify. But two, with us, we've got a healthy mix of for-profit entities that help us sustain that. So back during the last crisis in about 2007 or so, the Great Recession,
yeah,
a lot of nonprofits disappeared.
Yes.
In fact, that's how we expanded into New Mexico, as there was a nonprofit that was failing. And rather than let it go and let those services be unmet, we took it over. And during that period, CPLC actually had growth. So this is, again, back to how we're good at looking at opportunities, exploiting opportunities, and taking risk. Risk is, in the nonprofit sector, is really a bad word. They're very, very risk adverse. Everything has to be a home run. Boards often demand that everything be successful. Our board understands that risk is a part of our game. It's a part of our mix. At times, not everything that CPLC done has been successful. But as you all know, being in business, that's the way it is.
Well, you alluded to that earlier. You said, if we're going to fail, we're going to fail fast, right, and then get on to the next thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, but we've had enough home runs over our history where, you know, we're still here and hopefully here for another 50.
Yeah. Very, very impressive and obviously very important work. How can our listeners get a hold of you and or the organization?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. www.cplc.org or cplc.org. You can go on there. We have an about section and you can just learn about who we are, what we do. Anything you need to know about us is on there.
Great. And donors and or sponsors, is that an important part of how you guys function?
Yeah, you know, we do have some fundraising efforts. Fundraising for us is a smaller part of our revenue mix, unfortunately.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Programmatically, we have been successful, but we do have some programs out there that are not financial winners. In order for those programs to be sustained, you know, we have to do some fundraising. We have to create some excess revenue to make sure those programs keep going and keep providing those services to the community. So to do that, there is a way online as well that you can find where you can donate. You can volunteer with us as well. You can engage with us just if you want to receive our newsletter. So any which way you can engage with CPLC.
Fantastic. I appreciate you being here today. It's great to reconnect with you and obviously teach us a little bit more. I had no idea. A friend recommended that we connect and get you on air, so I figured I might as well follow up on that. I'm really impressed with everything that Chicanos Por La Causa is doing and the big part, the impact that you guys have had not only for Arizona residents and our community, but also now looking at the whole Southwest.
Absolutely.
Let us know how we can continue to help you reach those goals.
Thanks, Karen.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank both Max and Randall for being here. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X. Some media leans left and some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm your host, Karen Nowicki.